Welcome to the BYU Sports Cave, a podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Network. It's time to slap in your earbuds and take a seat in the den.
Here's what's coming up on today's podcast. Around the Horn.
Hello, BYU sports fan, and finally, spring camp has opened. Earlier this week, I posted my questions, the five questions about spring camp that you and I as BYU fans should keep top of mind as we're moving through spring camp and into this fall. You can check about that that post out on Torn by Sports, and it's the five questions that BYU fans need to keep in mind, and I'll link it at the bottom of the podcast in the show notes. So, first off, the question I ask is, does Taysom Hill pose a factor? Taysom Hill absolutely posts a factor in spring camp. Now, Ty Detmer has come out and had a couple of quotes that says, nobody's going to win the QB battle in spring. Nobody's going to lose the QB battle in spring. Jay Drew from the Salt Lake Tribune had a fantastic retweet of a question that Taysom almost looked a little upset that he got asked. Question is, will he tear apart the locker room if he doesn't get the starting job? Now, let's get some context here, and I'm sure you guys know it, but I'll share with the folks that don't. Back in Riley Nelson and the Jake Keep days, you may be aware or you may not be aware that Jake Heaps was all about Jake Heaps. This wasn't about a mission versus non-mission thing. The locker room was torn apart that the fact Jake Heaps was just about Jake Heaps. I don't see that about Taysom Hill. I think Taysom Hill is a good, gritty guy, and I think people respect him, but he's also not about himself entirely. But because Tanner has 3 years to go, and every other player out there wants, if they win the starting job, whether it's because of injury, season ending, or the fact that they just outplayed the person ahead of them, this is natural football. Taysom absolutely does have a factor, because if he becomes sour grapes, if he becomes, and he starts to lobby the coaches for additional playing time, there may be a chance that he fractures that locker room. In a Kalani Sitake world, we just don't know how that's going to work out, because Kalani Sitake's never been a head coach. But when we look back at Bronco Mendenhall, and we look back at the issue there, there was a fractured locker room. And it forever, and of course, Jake Heaps is not Taysom Hill. I'll say this again, BYU fans. But if there ever becomes an issue, then how is Kalani going to handle it? We knew how Bronco did, and it did not go well. So much so that Jake Heaps left, and we now know Jake Heaps wasn't as good as he thought he was. Taysom Hill, we only know he's been good for a fourth to maybe a third of the games he was eligible to play because he's been injured. That's my take. Is Taysom Hill, yes, he does factor in, but at the end of the day, because he's not even cleared to do full contact and he's not 100% by his own admission, nothing's going to be lost here at spring. And BYU fans, we need to set the expectation that spring is spring. It is not the fall. It's not going into the starting game. And that's when we really will see who's won the QB battle. Musical chairs. There's a lot of folks switching sides. Francis Bernard, who was a running back who really stood out as a running back, came on. He's from Harriman High. He came on and filled in for our absent Jamal Williams and an injury from the other running backs that were there. But he's now coming over to the defensive side of the ball to play defense. And Harvey Longhi, who was at the University of Utah, who was a combo running back linebacker, who was probably leaning over to linebacker anyway, when he came to BYU, he just started linebacker. Bernard's doing the same thing. So I thought that was interesting as well. And of course, you can read the other notables in the article. Participating and who isn't participating. They talked about injuries, and that they, of course, are adopting the continued line that Bronco Mendenhall had and BYU school policy, and we didn't expect anything different, right, folks? They, when they have honor code violations, they're going to continue to have honor code violations, and they're going to keep that private. I think that's one of the best things that BYU can do. The challenge will be is if any one of those kids become public, then speaking to it, making sure that it's not a a crime against humanity that somebody had an honor code issue. This really is going to be the proof in the pudding for Kalani Sitake and the team, because they have folks on the coaching squad who've gone through the honor code. And as a result, I think there's going to be a more humanistic side of the honor code. And I think they're going to try to keep kids in school rather than expelling them or having them go away like they did in the Bronco Mendenhall era. So I think that's a good thing. The key is Taki Taki, who recently got engaged, is participating in practice. Now, if he can continue to go to school and go to classes and participate, he's an exciting player. I really enjoy his energy and his ability to just energize that defense and not just put it all on Harvey Longhi to protect BYU secondary. We know that, and this kind of gets us into our next piece, number four, is our weaknesses. There is a weakness on BYU's defense, and I'm not probably telling anybody out of school what this is, but Micah Hanneman and Michael Davis, well, Michael Davis is probably one of the fastest people I've ever seen on BYU squad, short of Devon Blackman. Michael Davis has a phenomenal ability to do coverage. Now, he does give quite a bit of space between who he's covering, but that's often common with DBs. The problem is that Micah Hanneman is such a liability on the other side, or at least he was this last year, and hopefully he progresses and matures, but there's no additional help coming through or talent that would challenge them at the defensive back era or the spot. And so that poses a problem on the defensive side, because in Kalani Sitake's system, he's a traditional 4-3 guy. But BYU's system has been, for Bronco Mendenhall's era, a 3-4 guy. And that requires phenomenal defensive nose tackle. And when the nose tackle is out, then there's a gap right up the middle. Now, Bronson Confusi could still be a phenomenal defensive end, and you saw this last year, he really lit up. But if our nose tackle could have been there the entire year, I'm in awe of what could have been for Bronson Confusi. So that's a good thing. The flip to that is when you're changing defensive personnel and you're going over from a 3-4 to a 4-3, then a lot of people start to shuffle. And this change for Bernard might be a part of that switch where we get the three best linebackers. But I think we're still going to have 3-4, and we're still going to have great linebackers to augment our current personnel, because you can't change over a dime. A lot of the folks that Kalani signed were sign-and-sends, meaning they were going to go directly on a mission and then come back in a couple years when their mission's done. So you have this interim period that most college programs don't have to deal with, is how your changing personnel goes on. And so possibly BYU's change is going to be a little bit of a stunted growth for at least a couple of years until we truly see Kalani's guys get in the system. Change in scheme. And we talked about 3-4. The other part of the scheme that is bound to change is our offensive line, or just generally offense. And part of our weaknesses, as well as changing scheme, is we did the no huddle option a lot through Robert and I. The fast and furious, shock and awe, you know, the terms that would come out of BYU and Robert and I were kind of comical, but The key is, and this is where Kalani stated when he was hired, is we're going to run the ball a little bit more. We're going to pass. We're going to turn over the ball less. We need to get stronger. We need to get faster. And we need to get lengthier. The change in scheme in the offense is going to have to evolve. We're currently, if Tanner becomes the quarterback, he is a pocket passer. If Taysom is the quarterback, for him to survive his brittle bones issues, he's going to have to be a pocket passer as well, or he's going to have to evolve. And the scheme has to change. The scheme has to go to a more of a pro-style offense because that's what Ty Detmer did. And that's the scheme that Ty Detmer wants to play, and that's within the overall scheme of Kalani Sitake's preferred method of having a football team together. So we're going to see a lot of changes. We're going to see a lot of personnel changes. It is a huge weakness that is going to be upon us, and that's why people are worried about this rookie coaching staff. Do I think Ed Lamb makes a huge amount of difference? Absolutely. And I think it's fantastic he's there. But that, it's still going to be tenuous. It's still going to be hard. But gosh, football, I'm so glad. I'm so excited to be able to go down to the BYU scrimmage. And obviously we'll take pictures and news and notes and share that with the world on touredbysports.com. But football, spring ball, it's open, it's happening. And thank heavens, our BYU football boys are back on the gridiron. Oh, you are holy, righteous, and redeemed. And every time I fall, there'll be those who will call me a mistake.
My dad's podcast is sponsored by...
Here I am in Cancun. This is me talking to La Policia. This girl totally sweating me. And I don't even remember taking this one.
You realize this is a job interview.
I know. I wanted to show you how proficient I am in social media.
We'll be in touch. Excuse me. Hello.
Hi, I'm just following up on the interview.
Dimpatient. Dim and impatient. Hunger keeps inventing new problems. So we invented new Snickers Crisper. There'll be no combination here. You are holy, righteous, and redeemed.
Every time I fall, there'll be those who will call me a mistake. Well, that's okay.
Next on my dad's podcast, Outside the Lines.
All right, folks. In this week's Outside the Lines, I kind of got inspired. I've been listening to a few podcasts about BYU, BYU basketball, because as you guys know, and my experience with the Taxi Squad, as well as Holy Rivals. Not a really big basketball guy until we get into March Madness. I listened to one particular podcast, another podcast here on the Torn by Sports Network, which is the Wise Guys. And they got together and they started talking about Dave Rose and the benefit of BYU being in the West Coast Conference. And I started to get really intrigued by that discussion. So this is what I want to share with you guys and my discussion that went inside in my head, that's still going inside in my head. And I'd be interested in getting your feedback via the Twitter machine at BYU Sports Cave. And as we start to wind down the West Coast Conference play and the regular season for that merit in men's college basketball, and we're waiting for the big dance and the conference tournaments to start up, I wanted to explore a couple topics with you. And here they are. Is the West Coast Conference hurting BYU basketball? We'll attempt to answer that question, or at least some thoughts in my head. Was BYU better off when they were in the West Coast Conference? Is Coach Dave Rose underperforming, or should we just lower our expectations for him and the team? Should there be a chance or a change? Is there a chance that there's going to be a change at the head coach position at BYU basketball? And is Coach Rose getting the Bronco Mendenhall benefit? And what are the pros and cons that we should consider as fans? So the first question is the West Coast Conference hurting BYU's basketball team? My gut tells me it's not. My gut tells me that it has to be something more. The West Coast Conference isn't a bad conference because Gonzaga's been into it, and it has won year after year after year. Now, granted, they had a down year, and there is a chance that if they don't get the bid, the West Coast Conference could be a one big league. That does have its downfalls. It can be a hindrance to a team like BYU that sees itself as let's put it this way, our fans sometimes think of it as something better than maybe a mid-major basketball conference. In the West Coast Conference, I would agree. My initial thought was, gosh, they're underperforming. They're losing to Pacific, and they're struggling, and everything's going wrong. But when I looked at the numbers, the question came into my mind is, was the basketball team better in the Mountain West Conference versus the West Coast Conference? And so when I looked at the numbers, and I'll post a link down on the website that really has some good analytics, they cited that the average wins in the Mountain West Conference for a Dave Rose coached team was 26.5 per year. That's a lot of wins. The average wins per year in the West Coast Conference is 24 per year. So why the disparagement in our minds versus a record? Because realistically, that's only two and a half games per year on average that we're not winning in the West Coast Conference. Why are we losing the games in the West Coast Conference when we'd win in the Mountain West Conference? My biggest thought here is the Mountain West Conference was made up of a lot of teams that were in, let's say, Wyoming, when we would see teams in Colorado, or we would see teams that just weren't up to snuff. And maybe the conference was a little bit weaker in the Mountain West Conference, and it wasn't so tough. The West Coast Conference, however, for those advocates, pro and con, would cite the same thing. So I think it goes back into the coach, the coach's expectations, and possibly the talent. Should we have lower expectations for Coach Rose because the mission age came into play in the middle of this thing when the LDS Church dropped the age from 19 to 18 and kids now go on sign and sends as opposed to 1 year, then go, and then come back and have three more? There's probably arguments on both sides that there's a benefit and a hindrance here. But to have kids into a four-year program and get all 4 years at once, I think lends to the strength of a football schedule and the strength of a, football, there you go. I'm going back to my roots and what I like. But I would think that would help a basketball program. It's just hard when you get through the transition period of the first 2 years. But we're starting to get to that point. Do we lower expectations that the best that BYU can get is maybe a bubble team because they are in the West Coast Conference and they can't seem to win against St. Mary's and Gonzaga? I don't think we have to lower our expectations. I don't think we have to expect less, because these kids who are going to Lone Peak, Alpine, whatever Utah high school, they're winning state championships. And if they're winning state championships there and they're nationally ranked basketball programs, then these kids should compete. Now, I would like to see a little bit more diversity on the basketball team. We can't just have all white guys. Diversity is a good thing. And it helps with our speed, it helps with our length, and it helps with the fact that BYU, this is me getting into a political thing, but I think it's better for our religion when we can show that more ethnic groups have a home within this religion. Because if we do believe that our Heavenly Father is no respecter of person and loves everyone equally, then I think a lot of our attitude about other people, about other races, about other people in general tend to become more tolerant, and we don't have to change who we are, but if we're more approachable, then kids of different faiths will come for the opportunity if we're winning. And if we're winning and there's a positive attitude towards other faiths, other cultures, other folks, then BYU gets more general acceptance. And our vision, who we are as Mormons, become more understandable, and we're less considered a cult as more of a national or a recognized religion. And that can only, in my mind, foster understanding rather than impede it. But lower expectations, no. I think we should continue to expect Coach Rose to win. But I was a little shocked by the win total, because 24 wins a year is great. The question is who are they winning them against? And in the West Coast Conference, if we're going to if we want to get a higher seed, if we want to go deep into the Sweet 16, we have to look at recruiting, we have to look at talent, and then we have to look at the head coach. So, in my mind, in this argument that I've had of the last few days as we're winding down the season, is Coach Rose underperforming? So, taken his historically, this also includes the average wins in the Mountain West Conference as well as in the West Coast Conference. I was kind of shocked that he's number 31 on a career coaching leader's winning percentage list. And for all the college coaches that have been in this world and the 100 and plus coaching, 31's not bad. 31's actually, if you take all the P5 schools and you start adding them up, he's better than a lot of P5 schools' coaches. They're winning. Again, scheduling could come into place, but I was kind of shocked that he's got such a high winning percentage. He's over 70%. So, you know, is he doing his job? Is he winning? And I think he is. In 2015, it was remarkable to me that Coach Rose had a 25-win season. He went to the dance for the second year in a row, and he benefited from that. He has been, I would hate to say he's not trending down, but he's been in the dance. And depending on his RPI, and according to Greg Rebell, that actually is fairly high, and he's in the 60s at times. That likely is going to be good enough to get him in. Now, whether he's a play-in or a low seed, doing well in the conference and being there year after year will only benefit that. We saw that with the University of Utah. And I'm hoping that this is a trend that Dave Rose can continue. The question in my mind then puts it all back on recruiting. Can Dave Rose recruit? And is he at the end of that recruit's coaching lifetime? Because kids generally tune out messages. If it's a generational thing, or we've seen a change in whom is playing basketball these days, and is Coach Rose's message resonating with those kids? And the question then begs is, should there be a change at the helm of the men's basketball team? Why should we, the question, again, in my mind, is why should we hold on to a coach that is only consistent during the regular season, meaning he's getting 20-plus wins a season, and he's only second or third in the West Coast Conference and never first? And we're not going deep into the NCAA tournament. So why should we hold on to some folks? Why should we hold on to a coach like that? The question comes in, and we've heard these questions before about Bronco Mendenhall. Well, who else are you going to get? So this Bronco Mendenhall effect comes into my mind, that because we're consistent due to scheduling, meaning we're scheduling these wins, and that gives us as fans a false sense of identity to understand that we're not as good as what we really are, or what we really are as a product, meaning we might be a mid-major, and we might be outperforming, but really when push comes to shove, we're not going to win against the Kentuckys. We're not going to win against the Dukes. And we're kidding ourselves, and that goes back to the expectations game, is should we just expect mediocrity? Or this Bronco Mendenhall effect. Proof is in the pudding, and ultimately Kalani Sitake's success or lack of success as a head football coach is going to be determined on the wins and losses that we see this fall, because he really does have a brutal schedule. But if he can win under that with Broncos guys, which Bronco, according to Jay Drew in his article, did what he was supposed to do, win the games he was supposed to do on average, and he didn't win the big games on average that he needed to really define himself as a great college coach, even though he had a 70% winning percentage. Well, Dave Rose has a 70% winning percentage. We don't necessarily know what we're going to go get if we don't explore the options of expectations for this head coach. I'm not advocating for Dave Rose to go. When I did the analytics on this and started to review, gosh, what has Coach Rose accomplished? He's actually accomplished quite a lot. And like the wise guys in their discussion on their latest podcast came to the understanding, I think it's too early to tell. I think it's this next year when they start getting a lot of the recruits back after the 2016-17 season, then I think we as fans can kind of determine, is Coach Rose on an upward trajectory, or is he sloping down and has his message lost resonance with the kids? Time will tell. But overall, I was proven a little wrong that Coach Rose is a pretty good coach, and he's been winning consistently. Is he winning the targeted games against Gonzaga and the big boys? I'm hoping that the renewed cultures down at BYU about winning and expectations and Kalani Sitake can affect the other programs that we have down there, and that we can elevate the expectations of winning and expect that of ourselves, but also those boys need to expect it of themselves that they can do it. And to go out and knock out the David and Goliath, we're David, the other teams are Goliath, and to start to prove that we belong. That attitude, that swagger, but the confidence and the ability, which is the talent gap, needs to be there. And next year seems to be, or proposes to be a real special season for BYU basketball. So I'll be tuning in. I'm hoping for the Cougars to get into the dance, but the only way for them to assure themselves a spot is the West Coast Conference. So good luck, Dave Rose. Good luck to the team. I hope you all do well. And go Cougs. And redeemed. And every time I fall, there'll be those who will call me a mistake. Well, that's okay. Well, folks, that's a wrap. We've talked about BYU football. We've talked about basketball. And if you have any questions, concerns, or you just darn well disagree with me, you can always find me out on the Twitter machine at BYU Sports Cave. Or if you want to send me some hate mail, you can send that to me at BYUSportsCave@gmail.com. Now, of course, join me next week on the BYU Sports Cave here on the 20 by Sports Network, the iTunes podcast, or Stitcher Radio. Thanks for joining us at the BYU Sports Cave.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey.